That's one of my very favorite percussionists, Fray Barreto, great percussionist, composer, band leader, and a leader in the Afro-jazz fusion movement as well. He's performed with many of the jazz greats, but he left us too soon. This is called Power. It's the title track from his 1970 album. And it gives a clue as to where we are going today. We're talking about Puerto Rico today. As you know, we've been following since Hurricane Maria hit with such devastating impact on September the 20th last year, killing in excess of 3,000 people, leaving incredible damage in her wake. And that still has not yet been resolved, despite pledges and promises to fix things or help return things as quickly as possible to, quote, normal, unquote. Our guest today is a citizen journalist. She has been reporting to us about what has happened and what is happening in Puerto Rico since Hurricane Maria. And what we have been learning from her is that the devastation has brought in, has ushered in, an incredible network of interlopers at almost every level, but particularly at the governmental level, where one would think, well, gee, a country going through this much devastation, the whole island was leveled. You would think that the number one priority of government would be to restore things, to get things back in order. Of course, we know that that does not happen overnight. But what we, and I said this even before the hurricane hit, as the news came about that Puerto Rico was in the eye of an impending storm. And I talked about how such tragedy or potential tragedy is music to many people's ears. And since then, since the storm did hit, our correspondent, our citizen journalist, Elisa Yenza is her name, has been telling us about the horrible aftermath of Hurricane Maria that further endangers the lives and well-being of people on the island. We've talked here about how in situations like that you have people suddenly appearing. We've talked about the carving up of Puerto Rico, especially by real estate interests. We've talked about money that allegedly is allocated, but nobody knows where it is. to help with repairs and to bring people back to a sense, some sort of sense of normalcy. That's not happening either. So she is with us today, and we are going to discuss some finite and defined areas. It's not going to be the be-all and end-all of reports in Puerto Rico. It's simply going to be an update from where we left off, understanding that there is so much more to go. And just the same, it is important that we appreciate what is going on in Puerto Rico. We just talked yesterday about Haiti and what is going on in Haiti. And it is not just a fuel shortage. It is a whole different scenario that's playing out to lethal effect, I would say, in Haiti, affecting the lives of people. The same is happening in Puerto Rico, where after this devastating storm, the worst natural disaster to hit Puerto Rico in almost 100 years, you would think the misery index would encourage a strong effort by those who are in a position to help and those who are authorized to help, in fact, to help. Elisa, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Beatrice, for having us here and for, you know, really being concerned about the people in Puerto Rico.
I certainly am, and many, many people are, except we don't know it. You know, this is not sexy news to report, you know, so we still are awaiting a really credible effort by mainstream media to get at the root of this. But tell us where we will start today.
Well, all I can say is that if something doesn't happen soon, we're heading for a real major disaster. It's already really bad. And if these money agreements are put into place without first separating the money needed to run the government and render services to the people, then the country's going to, you know, completely destroy itself. There's no way you can continue with this because they're doing all kinds of money agreements, and we don't even know how we're going to pay for it. So I'm really concerned because a lot of things are happening right now. The crimes are escalating. Violence, domestic violence cases are escalating. When people are having problems, everything else explodes. Children are still under stress from the hurricane. So I'm really concerned that what's happening now. I don't feel that the government is taking care of us or defending us in the court, and that's the feeling of a lot of people. We don't have anybody that's watching out for us.
Let's talk about the situation in the courts. What is supposed to be happening in the courts right now?
Well, there are several, there's a whole bunch of debt. It's like $73 billion in debt. But 24% of it is under a special agreement that was made. It's a tool, a financial tool that was made in the 80s, and I mean in the 90s, which made for, it's about 24% of the total debt of Puerto Rico, and it's known as COFINA bills. It was done when we started with the economic crisis in 2007. They had this implemented a year before because we were already having an economic crisis, and they needed to finance our debt, and so they created this tool, which is a form of bonds that they sell in the market. And this was supposed to pay past debt, and it covers 24% of the debt that we have right now on the island. It's about $17 billion. And this case was up for consideration by Judge Laura Taylor Swain, who's in charge of in bankruptcy court of managing all the different contracts and debt that Puerto Rico has. And they have an agreement with the bondholders and the Puerto Rico government under the supervision of the oversight board, which we call La Junta here. And they had to ratify this agreement in front of the judge. She had a hearing on the 16th of January. Everybody thought that it was all set and that this was going to go through, but luckily the judge has serious concerns about a lot of the things that have been protested by people and by other parts in the country, and so she has not made a decision as to now.
Okay, so Puerto Rico, even before the storm, Puerto Rico was dealing with debt, and there were many questions about that debt. How did that debt come to be? What caused that amount of debt? And what remedies were available to assist the island in dissipating that debt and getting back on track? Because until that time, Puerto Rico did not have, it was not hounded by debt. Could you explain, to the extent that you understand it, how did Puerto Rico I don't even know how to categorize it. Is it a quasi-independent country? Is it a fully independent country? It's a Commonwealth of the United States. What, it seems to me that the lack of definition between the political and economic arrangement between the United States and Puerto Rico itself caused a lot of problems about how this country, this island nation, was to run and cover its own expenses. What is your understanding of it?
Well, it's correct that there is a lot of political things that define what can be done and what alternatives Puerto Rico has. And the sad part about this is that since 1952, when we finally had a constitution set up here with an agreement between the United States and Puerto Rico, which the United States has always said that we finally had an autonomous government. And everybody thought that that was what we had, an autonomous government. It was a territory of the United States. We had limitations on the things we can do and the business we can hold without the United States permission with other countries. And we're talking about other islands that are right next to us, which would be the natural thing to do, right? Do commerce with your neighbors. But we have restrictions on a lot of things, but we had other things that would provide for Puerto Rico to make a living as a territory, special tax exemptions and everything. And things started to go downhill when some of those tax exemptions were removed from the IRS code of the United States. We already had difficulties with that. And then the economic crisis that the United States had with the banking and the investment industry went terrible over there and in the rest of the world. And when it rains in the United States, it pours in Puerto Rico economically because we depend on the U.S. economy. And so when something's not working over there, you can see the effects here. And then that was, we had for many years special consideration, and we had special municipal bonds that were tax exempt on three different levels. So they were very precious and very well reputed in the street. And for many years, people would buy these bonds because they were very secure. But when Puerto Rico got into financial crisis, since the bonds are to finance the government in advance, and Puerto Rico has to return that money, and that's the profit for the bondholders, when we no longer could pay because our financial situation went really bad, then the bondholders could not get the money. And that's what's happening now. In 2015, Puerto Rico defaulted on its payments because we didn't have enough money to pay the bonds that we have. And the one that's up right now in the court are the COFINA bonds, but there's all kinds of other bonds that have to have special agreements and debt deduction. And it's something similar to what happened in Detroit, where they had to evaluate all the debt and and make new agreements, and so that we can, you know, go back to the market and continue to take loans, which that's the main goal apparently here. It's not even the people's concern. I mean, the people are not the concern. It's going back to the market and taking more money is what this whole thing is all about. And so people are suffering because they're not being taken care of.
Why is this major catastrophe, an economic or financial catastrophe, being dealt primarily in the courts and not in a legislative body?
Well, that's one of the things that really, it was dealt at one point in Congress in the Committee for Natural Resources and Indigenous Affairs, which is very strangely where they deal with us, but they don't give us the privileges that the Native Americans have. They don't consider us in that sense, but we're under the same committee. And when we could not pay, they started dealing with that fact in Congress, and that's where they created this PROMESA law, which basically is to reorganize Puerto Rico's finances so we can go back to the market and finance our government. There were supposed to be some economic development fund so that we could lift ourselves up and get back on track, but none of that has happened. And then to add insult to injury, if it was bad enough, Utrecht, to do something and even be able to comply with this, because there's a lot of illegality and corruption going on in the way this whole debt was created to begin with. If it was bad enough before the hurricanes, we got hit by two hurricanes in less than 3 weeks. And everybody knows more than we know what happened, because we could not see the films that you were seeing in the United States. We had no broadcasting, no electricity on the island. You could see what was in your neighborhood, and that was it, for many, many months. I personally had no electricity for almost 7 months. So you can imagine how difficult it was for me to even do my job, because I couldn't charge my cameras. I couldn't download them on the computer. I couldn't transmit anything. I mean, other people had really, that I just didn't do it. But some people couldn't live because they needed respirators or refrigerators for their insulin. That's why we had all those people die, because there was no way that everything that you have in your life, I want people to imagine, you wake up in the morning, you turn the switch, the light switch on, you go to the bathroom. None of those things were working. We didn't have water for over a month in most of the houses either, because all the water is pumped by electricity. And there were no, you know, generators at most of the water plants. So everything that you know and for your whole life has been your life routine in a simple life, not anything complicated, no luxuries. All of that was wiped out for a long time. And so people are still dealing with that. A lot of people lost their jobs and they have not recovered it. And so there's economically, it's a disaster. People have left. People have lost their property. And in the middle of all this, where people are struggling, they're closing down schools and all kinds of other things, we're supposed to be, as a priority for us, is supposed to be paying this debt. So it's really, you know, terrible. And the worst part is that the government just wants to negotiate so they can go back to the market and get more money to spend. They're not really thinking about who's going to pay this bill. And I mean, this debt, and you know, it's all coming out from one pocket. In the meantime, they're also giving tax exemptions and incentives for businesses and things that we don't even have the right to know who's getting what, who's getting considered. And so there's not really a lot of new money coming in to pay these bills. And it's all coming out from one pocket, the consumers or the citizens. So, you know, it's really, I mean, It's something to really worry about. They're practically kicking us out of our own country because people have had to leave unwillingly. They've lost their homes. They, you know, they can't survive. You can see what's going on right now with just 1 month, that just 20% of the United States federal employees are not working. And it's creating a crisis where they're telling the employees to go look for food coupons and do garage sales in their houses and go for unemployment. And you're supposed to have a stable job, right, where you have some kind of savings. Now, imagine what the situation is for the whole island here in Puerto Rico with people that that are under the poverty level. More than 60% of the island lives under the poverty level. And on top of that, they don't have a job. They don't have any savings. And it's been going on for more than 14 months now. So if people can just visualize the disaster, you know, for human beings to live in a situation like this.
I go back to the what you had mentioned previously, which was in 1954, special measures were taken to assure Puerto Rico that it would be an autonomous government, meaning even though it was a territory of the United States, it would be self-governing. And the governance would originate in Puerto Rico primarily and would be primarily about Puerto Rico and the well-being of Puerto Ricans. But then there came a shift. And I'm so focused on what the reason or reasons were that were given that said, well, Puerto Rico suddenly developed debt that it could not possibly pay, which is the nature of debt. All right, you can't pay certain debts, so your country is hamstrung. Even if you might have the political autonomy, somebody else is controlling the strings. How did the government of Puerto Rico, such as it was, how did it allow itself to be divested of its power to make decisions with regard to what was happening locally throughout the island? How did it reach the point where people just walked away from their responsibility or allowed an overarching system operating out of Washington to decide what's best for Puerto Rico?
Well, when I listen to your question, what happened after 1952, for many years, the Puerto Rico started to develop itself, and after Cuba was closed with the situation that they had there, the United States, I think people that were, you know, active in the 60s, I was just a kid, say that the United States started to pay more attention to secure that Puerto Rico would be in a good state so that we wouldn't have a situation like Cuba, because they had an interest in having us as part of the United States. But at the end of the 60s and beginning of the 70s, I think it's not something that only happened here. This thing where Wall Street starts to come in and finance in advance governments, which in the past it was not that way. It was that, you know, like you have tax picked up in April and the government sees how much they collected before, you know, they have an estimate, but they really don't know how much they're really going to collect. And so people file their income tax returns. And then, well, we have this amount of money. They budget with the money and they run the government the next year, you know, with the money they already collected. And you would only finance in the past in Puerto Rico special projects, like when we finally did our first expressway to cross the mountain range and go to the south of the island. That was not regular money. That was not a regular thing that had to be done. So they went to the market and got money for that. And then it was the first toll system that we had, and it paid for itself. But after the 70s, we started having a model that I think it was imposed, where we were supposed to be in good credit with the Moody's, Standards and Poor's, and Fitch evaluations, and then be able to issue bonds to finance in advance the debt of Puerto Rico. Well, all these things, when you go to get your credit and they say your credit A or B or whatever, they're supposed to be evaluating with the documents that the government says on what the finances for the country is. And what seems to have happened is that false papers and misguided information and people with other interests that facilitated things and credit that was not supposed to be giving good credit when we were already tight. Everything like this has been going on because we have laws similar to the United States where the government is not supposed to go over a certain amount, percent of what they have in income for the, you know, like I think it's 2 or 3 years. You can't go over what you have, collected in the last few years. You can't go over 15%. And when they do something like that, then you're overboard and you can go into a financial crisis. I think the United States has that same issue right now. And this is what people should start thinking about, because we're just an example of what can happen everywhere, because they're going overboard. There is a game going on. And the only thing you can think, and we have now the oversight board has finally accepted that the last two bond issuings that were done in Puerto Rico are illegal, and they're asking the federal court to annul these last two bond issuings that went on in 2012 and 2014. We're talking about $6 billion in debt at the end there. That now, after 4 years, that all these groups have been saying this debt is illegal. We shouldn't have to pay for it, and there's other people that have to respond economically, like the investment companies that went ahead and issued these bonds when they knew that Puerto Rico could not pay. They knew that we were going through a financial crisis, and they knew that Section 936 of the tax code had been eliminated. So all the pharmaceutical companies were leaving, and we were not going to have their money deposited in our banks, which also was part of the situation. And they went ahead and did this because, you know, when these things are done, everybody gets commissions, sales commissions. Even when they sell stock that's not worth anything, that transaction makes them make money. So they don't care if nobody's going to pay. They just sell and buy, and, you know, and they, I'm sure they're handing out money under the table. There's no other reason why somebody in their right mind in a government position, unless they're totally stupid and believe something that's false, you know, they would accept something like that, where they're putting in jeopardy for 40 years their whole country. We're talking about our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren will be suffering and paying for this.
But still,
if they stay on the island, by the way, because people that can have an opportunity are leaving because, you know, you don't have a future in a situation like this.
Well, that's exactly what people want. Even before the storm, I promise you, I had this conversation and I issued a warning, not that, you know, I'm the great the visionary, but it was so clear to me that the misery, it caused people to think, it caused me to think, that the misery ramped up was a good thing, not for Puerto Rico, not for Puerto Ricans, but for people in the financial world, and particularly the issue I said also was land. People just buying up the land. The land is cheap. And people are leaving.
If you bankrupt the system,
that leaves it wide open.
If you bankrupt the system and you make the prices devaluate all the property because of the situation, then when people foreclose and they, you know, we're talking about 45,000 foreclosures in a couple of years, and there's 25,000 more pending. And then the banks, when they have too many foreclosures, instead of trying to have people stay in these homes, because see, in Puerto Rico, people have very low wages, especially the government employees didn't really have, it's not like federal government employees, but they had a stable a job for 30 years, and when they retired, they would have a small pension, they probably have their homes paid, and they'd have their medical plan. And for most families, being able to own their home was the most important thing, and most of people's savings was in their property. When you take that home away from people, that is the most terrible. You leave a person with nothing, you know, and going to the rental market is another situation. And what happened is the banks start foreclosing. They take all the properties. They don't care. They make a bundle of homes that in many cases were also bubble mortgages, which the houses really weren't worth what they were charging as, you know, in the mortgage. They were overpriced. they put them in as bad mortgages in a big bag of things, and they sell it on the market. They were selling things like this in the mutual funds, and then those funds aren't worth what they're supposed to be worth because the property that backs them up isn't worth that either. But if you go to Old San Juan, which you know is the oldest city in America, and we've had for years, the Institute of Culture was very careful of what people could do with these buildings because they have the old, 14-inch or 15-inch brick walls, the original ones that were made 400 years ago. And if you were going to have a property, you had to keep the facade and make sure that the facade and make sure that it you didn't damage the look of the colonial city, because this is, one of the treasures of humanity, and it's very valuable for everybody, including the United States. And so all of a sudden you go to Old San Juan and they took over these things that were unrented or needed repair that nobody wanted to invest in. And all of a sudden all the realties being by one or two companies, they fixed them. Thank God they haven't really messed them up, but now they're worth even more. So you can't have anybody local occupy these places for living or for businesses. And so it's like what happens in Hawaii and other places, where between that and the Airbnb that they prefer to rent and make their money in 3 months instead of having a family there a whole year. We're also having that crisis now, where there's, living spaces that are not super expensive are becoming very scarce. So people that lost their rental house don't have a place to go to either. That's why you saw that exodus of people going to the United States, because they didn't have a roof over their heads. We still have people living with the blue tarps over their head, and all that money that's been spent, and we don't have people, living in safe conditions right now. Just the daily life.
Okay, I just want to go back and finish off a mm-hmm. portion of what we had started to talk about, and that is, the situation has come to the attention of the courts. I remembered when there were hearings, both in San Juan and in Manhattan, I remarked with great regret that we had no representation, no one in the courtroom, although the fate of the entire island was being decided by all these various interests, we didn't have anybody speaking up for the people. We had no representation from the people. Okay, so now the situation is in the courts owing to specifically dealing with the debt. What do you think the judge's decision by saying, we have to ask and we have to have answered a lot more questions than we have now. Is this going to provide an opportunity for the people governing Puerto Rico or the people who are advocating for Puerto Rico to finally get their foot in the door in this discussion?
Well, the only thing that we have accomplished up to now is that the judge, in a very unusual move that is not apparently common from what lawyers in bankruptcy court say, last week she opened an opportunity for 24 people from the citizens to come and say in her court how they felt this particular COFINA new agreement, because they made a new agreement where they're taking away part of the original debt and extending it another 10 years. Instead of a 30-year agreement, it's going to be a 40-year agreement. And she wanted to hear what the people had to say, and people had to go online and ask for an opportunity to speak in front of her. And then it was like 5 minutes per person. If you had to talk in Spanish and they needed to translate, you had 2.5 minutes to say who you were and try to explain what the effects would be for 40 years in 5 minutes. And so that's what happened. And everybody thought it was just a pro forma thing and that she already had made her decision. But certain things have come up concerning the legality of the issuing of the bonds to begin with, because they took additional debt out of the 15% maximum amount that was permitted by law, because they made this new public corporation to manage the old debt. And people say technically they were illegal doing that also. So now she has, and she's also waiting, the judge is also waiting for the IRS to say how this new agreement might affect in terms of tax for the people that have the bonds and that would have to pay taxes, and if they're going to agree or not to recommend this. So because the government's closed, everything is a little bit slower. So we're in a limbo right now concerning what she's going to decide on this debt in particular, which is only the COFINA debt, and it's 25% of the total debt that the government owes. But the only thing I can say is that the people pressured enough for the financial board, for the oversight financial board, the junta, finally went to the judge the day before the public hearings were done, and they requested that the court remove the last two bond issuing from the total debt because they had concluded they had been done under illegal terms, and that makes it annullable. So after we have been saying for 4 years and everybody has said, where's the proof? You know, where's the proof? And we want an audit to prove what's going on, what the money, what it went to, why it was taken, who did it, and who's responsible. Because if you can define who's responsible, then you can define who can pay for this, so that the people that in good faith invested in the bonds, it's not their fault either, you know. I mean, we have two victims here, the people and the original bond buyers, because we have hedge funders that have been buying out for 15 cents out of a dollar. Now they want 95 cents for the 15 cents that they put in. Those are not the nice people. But the original people that put in their money for their retirement, and they invested it in Puerto Rico bonds, which were very, very secure bonds, you know, they are getting stuck too. And a lot of them are regular Puerto Rican citizens. I mean, this is the whole disgrace that is, you know, regular, ordinary people who don't have money or the power to defend themselves are not being defended by our government. The government did this debt, and most of the people are still in power or are working by contracts, or their kids are in power now or whatever. And so they're not going to go against the original arrangements or anything else. And some of them even are going to benefit with this agreement because they're going to get paid because they're bondholders themselves. And so this is the whole thing, that the people don't have anybody there to take care of the people.
And so to what degree do you and most Puerto Ricans hold responsible, say, Governor Rosselló?
We hold him responsible because he's not really fighting. And the other thing that's happening that I forgot to mention, PROMESA, among things that were supposed to be handled and done with this law, was that you had to define what the essential services were before you started doing this, so that the money for the indispensable priorities that have to be taken care of in a government, like health services, education, the roads, which are a disaster. People are losing their cars, and we don't have a good public transportation system, so people need to have a car to get around. And all this is not being taken care of because nobody has said, not the oversight board, who also had that responsibility, and the local government, to define what's the minimum amount of money from the money that we get through taxes. What's the minimum amount of money we have to put aside to take care of the people? And then what's left is what you should be using to try to pay your debt, right? Well, that's not happening. They have not defined. So right now, we 1,000 policemen left the force. They haven't had a new school to train policemen for 3 or 4 years now. They don't have money to train the new ones, and they don't have money to pay the new ones once they're trained. So we don't have policemen. We don't have firemen. We have one fireman in each firehouse. We don't have enough people. If something happens, we're in the dark, you know, and it's just so crazy. I mean, and people don't believe the governor anymore, you know, because he says things, but he doesn't back his acts with anything. And people just see that, you know, every time we turn around, we wake up in the morning and it's a nightmare every morning. You wake up and there's three more scandals going on and three more things. So even the people that are aware and could probably intellectually, you know, be leaders and fight for this, they, you know, people just can't handle it. It's like a a crisis that has so many ramifications that I think people are in shock right now. Actually, you don't really see people going out on the streets and trying to protest anymore, because they also passed laws that you can be arrested. If you push a police, you can go to jail for 7 years. You know, so they're changing the laws to restrict the liberty of people to protest. And people are getting scared. You know, if I go there and something happens, I was tear gassed, and I was in train station waiting to leave an event, and they 2 years ago, and they tear gassed everybody and got into the station. So those people that were with me are not going to go again to anything, because I went to cover the event, and I left after the formal event ended. But we were stuck in the train station, and the regular police that were there were also gassed because they had no masks. The other people from the aggressive teams on the police came down like four or five blocks with this spraying this stuff, and everybody got caught. So people are really even scared of going out. The only thing that they do now, maybe they'll do a petition online or something like that. But people, you know, and plus the daily life here is still such a struggle that you really don't have any time left. And there, the other things they're doing, like short terms to protest, very difficult for you to do something in time. The people in the legislature are not even having public hearings on the new projects that they're putting up to supposedly remedy this. They bring the new project and they just pass it. And since they have a majority of votes, the minority isn't even allowed to express itself. So bills are going by with no real scientific data to back it up, to even guarantee that it might work. So I, you know, it's like an SOA, an SOS to the world. Please, you know, make them ashamed of themselves. And, you know, because the United States, when they did pass this constitution and made us an autonomous government in the 50s, they bragged about how Puerto Rico now had an autonomous government. You can even find films of the 1950s talking about all the good things that Puerto Rico was doing, and people were hardworking people, and you had all these videos of the 50s where the United States was bragging about its territory, how well things were and how they had fixed everything. So we had this government where we had like a teamwork between the United States and Puerto Rico. And when we went into debt, Utrus, they told us, the court told us, and the White House told us that we had no rights, that we were a territory, and that we could even practically be sold if the United States felt like it, like what they did it in, you know, in 1898, where we were passed over without our consent from Spain to the United States. And they practically told us, you're not autonomous. That was like a bluff. You're a territory, you're a colony, and we can do with you whatever you want. And that's what they're doing. Basically, that's what they're doing. And the local government is taking it. We have elections here, and our public officials can't decide anything because the board, the oversight financial board, will tell them, you can't do that. You can't put a budget for that. You have to eliminate this law because we don't want you to protect the workers anymore with this law. You can't have a Christmas bonus anymore, which is something that's a tradition here. Even if we have the money, we cannot decide with the budget that we have what are our priorities. So that is not a democracy.
And you recently had a group of congressional members going to Puerto Rico. Largely, they went to, it was a, to see the performance in Puerto Rico of Hamilton, a Broadway production, and it went off with great success. Well, that's one thing. What success did the congressional group have in raising the matter of the current state of affairs in Puerto Rico as they were in Puerto Rico? What was impressed upon them that they admitted that would serve as the basis for advocacy once they came back to the United States?
Well, first, we didn't know they were coming for the Hamilton, although anybody in their right mind that knows that has a little bit of observation, could have figured that out. But they were supposed to be coming here in a, they were going to session here. Basically, there were supposed to be Democrats and progressives that were about 30 congressmen that were going to come session here to see what was going on with Puerto Rico's recovery after the hurricane. That was the supposed to be the reason why they were coming. Because, you know, there's been a lot of things going on where President Trump, not only for Puerto Rico, he decides he doesn't like something or he says, I'm not sending the funds. You know, so he did that with California before. And then he said all of a sudden that he was not going to send us the money that had been allocated in October. Some of it's been around, approved of for months now, and we're not getting reimbursement money for the townships or for recovery or anything. And they were supposed to come down here to see that. And they did a meeting where they had local politicians, and it was basically practically, you know, we were informed of some things that were spoken about, but, and they went to a few places to see a few of the nearby, you know, places that that needed help. But they really didn't have any dialogue with the people. Yesterday, Elizabeth Warren did a town meeting, but she had four questions that were allowed from the public, and they were, questions were put in a little basket and they were pulled out. So she does an event and she chooses four people at random, and that's supposed to take care of, like, you know, like she cares about Puerto Rico, and she found out what was going on here because she had four people at random ask her a question. And, you know, we all know, because in the past when people come from the United States, they usually have fundraisers also. And we suspect that that's another reason why they all have come here, because they have elections coming out soon and they're accommodating not only the people in Puerto Rico, but the people in the United States that care for Puerto Rico, that might think that these congressmen are interested in us and will help them with their political campaigns. And so that's what underground people are saying. You know, we're not being fooled anymore. We know what they really came here for. They're not really doing anything to get any money here. And it is true that there has been corruption, but as far as the funds are concerned, for FEMA funds and stuff like that, there's a whole regulation. You can't just trespass the money to the central government, and the central government in Puerto Rico do what they please. They have to, first they have to do the projects, and they have to present evidence, and then they get disbursement. It's not like they can take the money and spend it on something else, like it's being insinuated. Even President Trump has said that he's not sending any more money to Puerto Rico because we're corrupt here. Well, you set the standard. You still haven't given back the money that was spent and evidence for you, you know, since September of 2017, because all the townships were very careful. We waited for months, and almost 2 months, before they gave a whole regulation on how they wanted the evidence presented to them so that they would reimburse for emergency, you know, like trunk removals and cleanups after the hurricane. We still haven't had that money returned. And they have all the bills, all the evidence, photographs for everything, and they haven't even done that. So you can't pick up a people, you know, you can't reorganize society when you don't have any financial means to do it. It just can't happen. I mean, the communities have worked, and the first month, most of the towns were on their own because people couldn't even get there. So they did what they could as long as they had diesel and equipment, local equipment, and the farmers pulled out what they had. And a lot of things were done, you know, right there with no documentation because it was an emergency and people needed to be able to leave their property and go get help or food or whatever. After those first few days, people were on their own for more than a month before the central government really started, you know, bringing in major things. Even the U.S. Army, who started distributing food, said they had a hard time because our terrain was not easy for them to handle, and they were using helicopters. So, you know, only the city life is a little bit restored in a lot of senses, but, you know, it's not really happening. And you know, I don't see if we have to start paying, it's $423 million the first year just for this 24% of the debt. Now, you divide that, and that's a lot of money a month that we have to bail out from our income to pay this agreement. And this is only the first year. It escalates. So you start with $420 million plus a year, and you will end up paying a lot of money in 40 years. And that's just 24% of the debt. The other debt has not even been arranged yet. And then the electric authority also has bonds that have to be paid for. So our electricity bills are going to go up. And the water company has another issue. So not even the basic services will be stable for anybody here. And the government, these are public corporations, which they now want to privatize. So we will not even have any control over that anymore, because once it's out of government hands and it's in private hands, you know what private companies want. They want a profit. They don't care if poor people don't have electricity. We had a whole system of subsidies to help those that don't have enough so that they can live at least a minimum. And that's going to be taken away completely now.
So the Congress members came and they saw. What indication is there that it did make an impression on them, at least to formulate a plan to advocate in behalf of Puerto Rico once they get back?
They did. There was not a lot, because we were in Christmas holidays, and besides, the Hamilton event was something that it's been taking up the news. It's very controversial because it was expensive, and there was a lottery going on, so you could probably get in for less money, and all these VIPs came. There were like 30 congressmen and 700 and some people came on chartered airplanes to Puerto Rico for this whole week. So there was not enough in the press that you could say that so-and-so said this and that. I do have faith in two things. Representative, I think, from Arizona, his name is Grijalva, Javier Grijalva, and he said even before this whole thing happened in Puerto Rico, once the Democratic Party went in power in the Congress, he said he's the new president for the Committee for Natural Resources and Indigenous Affairs in Congress, and he is committed to revise the PROMESA law because he thinks that the Oversight Board is overgoing, you know, is going too far on what they think they can do here, and they're not letting the government deal with their own problems because they're interfering too much. So he wanted to revise what's going on because he knows that Puerto Rico needs a different kind of treatment. And then we have Nidia Velázquez, who's a New York congresswoman, and she wants to put in a bill of law that she already has to remove people that have conflicts of interest in decision-making on all these debts, because part of the people in the Oversight Board were on the banks and the investment companies that put us in this mess. And they're one of the seven people in this board. By the way, they have spent more than $90 million in 2 years that we have to pay also. We can't pay our own government, and we're paying a parallel government with the Oversight Board. And some of those people there were the people that made the decisions and put and made the bonds possible when they knew we couldn't pay. So we need to have all those people removed. And if the governor has stocks in this, he can't be deciding in favor of us paying the bill, because he's going to get the money. That's why he's pushing it. He should be fighting for elimination or drastic reduction of the debt, and that we process those people, because it's a crime to do something like this. There is all kinds of laws that you can make people pay for not doing it, and people have become rich so that you can take their money that they made on this and pay the bond people and you know, the companies like UBS and Santander Bank and the other people that messed up too. They have monies and they have insurance to pay for this, and nobody's talking about having the insurance companies or the investment companies that didn't do things correctly, or Moody's and Standards. Nobody's responsible. The people, the poor people who didn't even know what was going on and what the consequences for these arrangements were when they started doing them, and we are responsible. And all they say to us is, you made the wrong choices, you chose the wrong politicians, so now you have to pay.
Well, Elisa, we have to leave it there for today. We're out of time. I want to thank you for your continued work as a citizen journalist in trying to get some answers to these very complex issues and questions, and for your diligence and your stamina, because so much depends and has depended on what you've been able to share with the public about what's going on in Puerto Rico. And it's not just about the storm. It's about Puerto Rico still being in the eye of the storm. Thank you so much for being with us today. And we'll talk again soon and usher another chapter in this awful story. Thank you so much. That brings us to the end of our program today. We'll see each other tomorrow, same time.